was the night before Denver Comic Con. And welcome to an episode of the Z2 Podcast.
What's it going to be? 13.5?
Either 13.5 or 14.
We'll figure that out later. You'll see it later.
Yeah, so we're going to do our double release, technically, because we're going to try and record again on Sunday for our normal episode. But tonight,
we'll see about that one. But
we'll try and take advantage of a few of the people we're hanging out with. So as always, I am Zach.
I am Zach as well. And we are joined by our lovely artist friend, Rachel, who did the new logo that you get to see every single week.
Hello.
And my lovely girlfriend and cosplayer, Kayla.
Hello.
So yeah, we were...
Might need to talk a little bit louder.
Hello.
Is it you?
What?
Huh? What you're looking for? By what? Adele?
No. Why are we bringing Billy Dee Williams into this? I don't know what's going on. Anyway. I know hello. I know Adele. I'm just confused of what's happening now.
Let's embrace move on.
The confusion.
Something got derailed already.
That's why it's
already a good start.
A con.
You just conned us into this whole conversation.
That's right.
Conversation. Anyway, Zach, you're the one who came up with the topic idea, so lay it out for the people.
Yeah, so for episode 13.5 or 14, we were just going to have Rachel talk about the logo for an entire hour.
Oh, dear. Well.
No, I'm joking.
Not really.
She will talk about it, though, because she is between commissions, and I asked her if she was bored, and she wanted to try something for us. And she was super awesome and decided to come up with the Z2 logo.
Which we both agree was fantastic and amazing when we saw the full thing come together.
So if you want to talk about it at all.
Alrighty. Well, it was kind of fun. I just approached it like I would approach any other commission. I started off with little thumbnail sketches, like sketches that kind of are rough but give the idea. I showed... kind of brought them up, showed it to these guys. They picked pretty fast which one they wanted.
We aren't picky.
Yeah, it was pretty unanimous.
She sent us about 12 different thumbnails, and we're like, oh, I like this one. And then I sent it to you. And
like, I also like that one.
And then you even said it. He was like, yeah, that was the one I would have liked.
I was really
too.
Hoping that you would pick the one you did. So
it,
I'm
it
really
just
glad
it fits so
that.
Well. Like, it was comic panels and the both of us with a little dialogue is like that describes this whole thing perfectly. So
yeah, and then I tortured Zach over like the next week and a half sending him like tiny snippets of and screenshots of what I was working on.
Yeah, that was really fun. It got me excited more and more, and then you're like, look, color palettes. I'm like, all right, this is where I just don't care now. It's all you.
We'll figure it. I was like, I like that color. It's like, cool, we'll go with that one.
I'm kind of sad that you didn't pick the one where I was wearing orange.
I felt betrayed. Rest of the colors just didn't really seem to fit the overall scheme.
Yeah. No, the colors were honestly the hardest thing to pick, just... trying to figure out what fit with the theme. At first I was like, oh, I should do the old-fashioned four-color process. But then figured we are in an age of digital printing, so mix the colors all you can.
Yeah, I thought it just came out really well. Like, the blues worked out really well. The purples kind of mixed everything together, and I also love the Colorado scenery just to kind of showcase
that was the one thing that between Rachel and I, when we were coming up with it, we literally just did not care. She was like, well, do you want office buildings? Do you want like actual comic panels or comic book characters in those? I'm like, you know, we're kind of based in Colorado, why not mountains? And she's like, okay.
Yeah,
she didn't care at that point, I didn't care at that point. We were like, yeah, let's go forward.
He gave me a chance to draw mountains. I took the chance. I love mountains.
Yeah. So we're all based in Denver in some sort of fashion. Rachel. Colorado. Sorry.
Colorado.
I am a Coloradan at heart. I grew up here and I just went out to Minnesota for college and that's where I am now based.
Yeah. We are all Colorado based, not Denver. Sorry. We're sitting in Denver right now. But... Aurora, Denver, whatever.
It's the same thing almost.
Yeah. And Denver Comic Con is one of our traditions together as friends. We always we've gone every single year since it first started, and literally this is the night before, and we're pretty pumped for tomorrow.
Even though Zach is very ASMR right now, just like...
Well, let me tell you how much I love Denver Comic Con. I'm getting tired. Creepy. I was ready to fall asleep right beforehand.
That's why I was like, we should do this now.
Hey, past my bedtime.
You know,
the sign that you are no longer in college when...
No, this was my bedtime in college, too. For all of our listeners, it's about 11 o'clock. I would go to bed around 10.
Yeah.
Some days, maybe.
Something like that. For me, I'm good. I'm ready to go.
Let's do this.
Alrighty. So, moving forward, I've had a lot of downtime between like Rebirth stuff just for reading. It's summer. So I've been watching a lot of the old Justice League Bruce Timm show and then digging through some back issues. And one of the two things we had in common, or those two had in common, was the character Black Mercy, which is this starfish that Mongol uses on different superheroes in the DC universe and makes them imagine what their perfect world is. So in the Justice League TV show, it was the episode for the man who had everything. And then it reappeared in Green Lantern, where Hal Jordan and Oliver Queen were also grabbed by the Black Mercy. And then it appeared again in Injustice, where that was kind of one of their final push attempts to get Superman to end his giant regime.
Or even more recently, the Supergirl show.
Oh, yeah, that was in Supergirl. The Girl
Who Has Everything episode.
Yeah, so I thought that would be just a really cool thing for us to talk about, because a lot of our discussion is based around modern comics and literally what comes out week to week. So I think it'd just be fun to do a good old discussion on stuff. So I can literally riff on every character just because I like to claim I'm a bit of a DC encyclopedia. But
just a bit.
Tad.
I just really love DC Comics, guys. But yeah, Black Mercy, a superhero who's given their perfect utopia. What would it be like for who?
Who wants to start?
Again, by all means, I can start, Rich.
I can also start.
And here they are all looking at me.
I don't know. We're just looking at each other.
Share with the class.
Oh,
we gave you a weak heads up.
You did give me a weak heads up.
It is to pretty hard fair, to figure out one character. Sewing.
This is true. This is true. Kayla understands my pain. Well, the thing is that the character's utopia, or... what I would just love to see the character do is kind of the hard thing. The character I have in mind being Barbara Gordon. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that Barbara Gordon is in her prime when she is doing her vigilante work, when she's as Batgirl, but also as Oracle. And I honestly, when I was introduced to the character of Barbara Gordon as Oracle, and so I think that I would, in the ideal kind of, what would her perfect world be? I would imagine it being something where she still is kind of, she's doing the crime fighting. She's still basically that, just, what am I looking for? Just like this giver of information who also is able to kick ass. Oh,
is no, it, you're good. Are you're we good. Allowed to swear? Yes, we are.
Okay.
Oh. I've dropped many enough bomb.
Okay.
Yes, you're all clear.
It's still able to kick ass, and you know what? And has good relationships. Doesn't get injured by the Joker. That's a big one.
So yeah. You still want the Oracle storyline, just without all the trauma.
Have you ever read
Joker
the?
Basically, I love her as Oracle. That's part of the thing.
Part of the reason that I think Barbara as Oracle is so interesting is because she was always going to grow into that kind of role. Because she always, by the time that the Killing Joke happened, she had outgrown the role of Batgirl anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the Killing Joke happened, and we got Oracle. And I think that was always a very natural growth of her character. We see it even in the current Batgirl series with the way that she runs her team of operatives with her best friend. And I think, for me, the closest we've ever come in canon to seeing what Barbara's Black Mercy world would be like is there's an issue in the 2009 Batgirl run with Stephanie Brown as Batgirl.
Brian Q. Miller's run.
Yes, Brian Q. Miller's run. And I think it's issue 12. And Barbara's been sort of put under by these robot computer things. And Stephanie eventually has to go into this world and pull her out. And we see Barbara wake up with Dick Grayson. And she is still Oracle, but she has the use of her legs, which to me I think is a very defining thing about her character. She was always going to be Oracle. It's just a matter of whether or not she had the use of her legs when she became Oracle.
Mm-hmm. It's so true because, I mean, Barbara, she's so intelligent. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the things that just makes me love her character so much. What's the
thing she has? It's like, I can't remember.
She has photographic memory.
Yeah, photographic memory. Eidetic
memory.
Yeah.
And
like, there's even the whole plot line recently that they used that whole.
They did.
As a plot device.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things is when I first read, is it the Killing Joke where the Joker paralyzes her?
Yes.
Yes. The Killing Joke. When I first experienced that comic run, it's like, it was so hard because I knew that it led to her as Oracle, which is what I first encountered her as. But at the same time, it's like, ooh, just.
And we get to experience it in full animation soon.
I know, Mark Hamill as the Joker. I'm going to
cry the whole time.
Oh my gosh, yes.
See, it's kind of funny because a lot of people don't really see The Killing Joke as a Batgirl story. It's a story that uses her as a plot device, but it's very much meant to be like Batman's last fight with the Joker.
I mean, I certainly agree with that, and I think there's certainly a problematic element with just using like, let's paralyze Barbara Gordon, Batgirl, for plot effect.
Not even as Batgirl.
Right.
That's
just attacked in her civilian identity in order to motivate two male characters.
And that's what the movie is trying to push forward too. Like, there's a whole added sequence in the Killing Joke animated feature that features Tara Strong as Batgirl doing her own thing, showing all of her importance with Gotham City, which I'm pretty excited about.
Good.
Yeah.
When does that animated movie come out?
This year.
Sometime this year. I don't think they've announced a date. They're premiering it at SDCC this year, so sometime after that.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Cool. I actually think, I find it kind of funny that I think the majority of us all pick Gotham-based characters.
Yeah.
Because it means a lot for Gotham characters.
I think it's just they experience so much trauma in their whole lifetimes. It's just, it'd be nice to not see that.
It reminds me of what happened in Batman Rebirth, or issue one this week, where, you know, there's a plane crashing and the civilians just freaking out on the plane. It's like, of all the places for us to get shot down, of course it's Gotham.
And then Bruce is ready to just give his life.
Yeah, and it's freaking
riding the plane as a horse.
Yeah, almost. But it's like that character, he was just moaning. It's like, if we got hit in Metropolis, we would have had Superman. We would have had this person or this person. But you know what? All we get in Gotham is Batman, and you get what you deserve in this city. Which,
he is the hero they deserve.
Yeah, Batman literally is the hero they deserve. So as much as I would love to talk about what I think Batman's perfect world would have been, one of my favorite characters, Damian Wayne, has one of the most interesting features as a character because he's gone from the kind of League Assassin Al Ghul identity into adopting that more Wayne persona throughout the years from Grant Morrison's run into Peter Tomasi. And we kind of get glimpses of what his perfect world would be, especially in Robin, Son of Batman, with Patrick Gleason doing the first arc and Ray Fox doing that second arc, where we actually get to see a Batman, his father, and his mother actually work side by side to further a common goal.
Whole time.
Yeah, and they're bickering the entire time, but it's one of the only positive moments we ever see in Damian's life where he actually has two parental figures that both care about him and they want to work with him. In a sense, I can almost imagine, you know, as proud as Damian is to be the son of Batman, I would almost see in his own perfect world that he would still be working as Robin, of course, eventually working his way up to Batman. But his Batman that I'd be working with would be Dick Grayson, because that Dick, prior to Peter Tomasi's run, was more of a father to Damian than Bruce ever was.
I was going
to
bring that up.
Well, mm-hmm. Considering he was dead and all, but
yeah.
Dick Grayson and Damian.
It's
a little damper.
Yeah.
I mean, even during the whole, like, this is kind of more recent storyline, the whole Robin Rises. Mm-hmm. Like, you mm-hmm. expected, like, you kept telling me, it's like, I'm expecting Damian, like, one of the first things he says is, where's Grayson?
Yeah, and that's one of the things, like, you know, everyone was just waiting for. Everyone wanted to see kind of that fallout between Dick and Damian. And we never really got that chance until Grayson issue 14, where Dick is recruiting everyone and he reveals to Tim, Jason, Damian, Barbara that he's been alive the entire time. And Tim yells at him, Jason hits him, Barbara's super mad at him, but Damian's the only one that goes up to him and just embraces him, hugs him, and holds him. And it's like they both thought each other were still dead at that point. And it's like, you're still alive, you're alive, and they're holding each other. And it's just this really heartwarming moment. And, you know, that kind of brings me to that another character I really want to talk to that we joked around right before we started. But Alfred, his perfect world literally would be one of the most tragic things. And definitely, again, in Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason's run of Batman and Robin, after Damian died, Alfred locked himself in the Internet 3.0 thing that Bruce invented, or 2.0, whatever. And it's Alfred literally knocking Damian out in the Batcave before he marches off into the battle, and that happened in Batman Incorporated, because he was literally Bruce's last line of defense before Damian went off to war, in that sense. And I feel like Alfred's perfect world, Martha and Thomas probably would still be alive, and then we would still have Bruce. We would still have a strong, confident Bruce that Alfred is extremely proud of. But I imagine like a little gaggle of orphans that Bruce adopted.
Yeah, without that initial trauma, I can't really imagine Bruce Wayne, son of billionaires, having taken up that vigilante persona.
Well, I mean, we even get to see that a bit in the super heavy Scott Snyder story, where Bruce doesn't have memories of being Batman. He's with mm-hmm. someone he cares about, and Alfred gets to watch him take care of all these children. Yeah, and it's the most heartwarming.
He's literally cleansed
thing.
Of all of that trauma at the end of Endgame. And Alfred just wants him to be. He never told him that he was Batman at that point.
He never wanted him to know. Like, the whole storyline, even if once Bruce found out, he's like, no, I don't want you to do this. You don't deserve to suffer that again.
Yeah, just, that was it.
Batman. That's probably the closest thing we've ever seen to, like, Alfred's utopia. Like, just those few issues where
it was in Zero Year, where Bruce and Julie ended up getting married in Alfred's vision. And they have kids of their own. But, you know, Alfred, more than anyone in the whole DC universe, has the most baggage to carry, because he has to watch his own son go out every single night, come back with scars, cuts, bruises, gunshot wounds, whatever. And
or then, more recently, added his daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in Batman 49, Scott Snyder and Yannick Packeat, they did Bruce finally going up to Alfred, where's my cave? And Alfred is literally
begging him,
holding him on the ground, crying. It's like, please don't. You've had such a good life. You need to continue to live it. And it's just like, he's such a great foiling character. And Alfred's role in Snyder's run just became so important to who Bruce is. Because, again, that's his father figure. That's the only person he ever had.
But in this idyllic world, if Thomas and Martha Wayne had not died, do you think that Bruce would have grown up with such a close relationship to Alfred as he did?
Maybe.
I want to say yes, just because it seems like Alfred still was a very important figure in the Wayne's family.
Mm-hmm. And I think Bruce would still grow up to be a decent person. Both of his parents were charity mongers, essentially. You know, that's probably not the right noun to use, but they were the best thing that ever happened to Gotham City.
They were trying to restore Gotham as much as they could.
And, you know, Bruce tries to do it in his own way, but, you know, he is the hero the city deserves, but the city fights back. It's the Court of Owls.
They're always watching.
How about you, Zach?
So I think you could probably guess where mine's going to be, but I also find it a little...
Barton Hawkeye. That's who you want to talk about, right?
No, not because of the shirt.
Hermione Granger.
What?
She never deserved Ron.
I mean, that's true. She did. I don't think Ron deserved her.
Yes. That's what we're
doing. That's the other way around. My bad.
But it's one of my favorite Gotham characters. Going back
Titus.
To Gotham. Yeah. Titus, yes. Gotta say all about that dog. But no, it's Jason, which I find interesting of what would his utopia actually be. Just because, mainly because of the fact that he was killed so young. Like, he didn't get much time to develop into, like see what his potential could be. Like, what I imagine his utopia could be, though, would be him and Barbara would be very close friends, just because even though they were never, like, really close, I imagine, like, over time, provided he didn't get killed, he would have actually grown very close to her, just because she recognizes that, yes, he's not Dick Grayson, but he has potential, and mm-hmm. Batman chose him for a reason.
Wasn't it in Red Hood and the Outlaws they showed Jason's, like, happiest memory, and it's Jason sick with the flu. Bruce tells him to go home and actually stays with him.
I believe so. That was something Jason always wanted, was just Bruce's admiration, and just he wanted some sort of father figure, because his father leaves, his mother dies of a drug overdose in the New 52 run, she's supposed to die in a drug overdose, and that's why he goes and finds her in the Death in the Family run. He believes that his mother's been dead this whole time, but then that's when he finds her and Joker kidnaps her, beats her, all that. So, I mean, that'd also probably be another aspect that I imagine would still be around. Like, he has his mother alive, he does some vigilante work for a while, but then he finds some other thing that he wants to strive for. He retires, or he helps Batman train someone.
You know, it's really striking to me that you said that, where, you know, he was a character who died as a kid, at like 15. Yeah, a teenager. And he never came to his full potential. It's, what was it? I think it was one of the Teen Titan runs post-crisis, where he goes into Titan's Tower and literally just beats the ever-living hell out of everyone there. And he's looking at all the memorial statues like, where's mine? I was a member of the Teen Titans, so yet you guys don't put up a statue for me. You know, he just wanted Bruce's acceptance.
Yeah, he wanted to be accepted, just because his story starts off of he finds the Batmobile and tries to steal a wheel off it. Like, already he's trying to prove that he can outsmart Batman. Like, he just has so much overzealousness of, like, oh, I can outsmart the world's greatest detective. I don't care. I don't care if you're Batman. I'm going to steal your Batmobile's wheel.
And then Batman lifts prints from it, and he's like, yeah, nice try, the detective name.
If I remember, he, like, triggers one of the many defensive systems, but Batman's watching him the whole time, like, what's this kid doing?
Yeah.
Kayla, do you have anything you want to add?
It's interesting to me that with all these Gotham characters in particular, we all seem to be going on a theme of maybe they were vigilantes for a while, or maybe they never were, but eventually they move on from that role. Whether that becomes a development through something they might have learned through that, like with Barbara, or something that it was good for a while, like with Jason, or maybe they never did it, as in Alfred's world with Bruce. But it seems, especially with Gotham, that to be a vigilante, it doesn't necessarily exclude happiness, but happiness is, it's much harder to achieve, and that imagining these characters in better worlds of their own design, being a vigilante is not so heavy a feature.
I mean, that's a Batgirl's whole thing with Burnside. You know, she wanted to leave Gotham because all Gotham was bad memories for her between Ricky and Dick and all of them.
Well, that's true. But she also, I mean, that wasn't the only reason. She wanted to develop her research, which is, again, where we see her growing into what could eventually become her new Oracle role. But I do think the city has a particular effect on these characters in ways that other cities of the DC universe don't seem to have. I think Gotham very much is a character in its own right and carries a presence in any comic set there.
Well, I'm glad you said that because Gotham literally is a character in
the new Batman.
In the new Batman. He's a superhero. Gotham, and his sidekick is Gotham Girl.
Real.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah. Tom King's writing it, so I'm kind of hyped.
And he
to
wants
see
to
it.
Keep as much of the Snyder feel as possible. But
and I
still
mean,
have his own.
At the same time, Snyder, when he wrote issue 1 of Batman and then issue 51 as a reprise to the whole Gotham is, trying to figure out.
Isn't that what this issue was titled to? Mm-hmm. Gotham Is
yeah.
or something?
And it's just really interesting to see that Gotham, if you become a vigilante in Gotham, you actually give a part of yourself to Gotham. It's not necessarily you sacrificing anything, but you become a part of it. Like, Snyder's whole approach is that Gotham is Batman, and what makes Gotham such an interesting character in and of itself is not the villains, but the hero that decided to stay and try to redeem it.
It's just so fascinating. Like, if you look at almost every other major DC, like, city, Gotham is the most probably, like, built up in, like, in terms of, like, its mythos and, like, just the city as a whole and, like, its all of its characters.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of characters. The only big cities that we see in the DC universe are Gotham and Metropolis, definitely.
And Central City.
Central City, yeah, mm-hmm. That's fair. But, you know, Green Arrow left Star City. Ray Palmer left Hub City?
Ivy
Town.
I mean, there was Coast City with Green Lantern.
Yeah, and
Hal Jordan's in freaking space right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and it's like a lot of these characters outgrow their usefulness within their city, but then you have characters like Superman, Flash, Batman, who constantly run in the city to help it be something else. And it's, you know, it's just really interesting to see the cities take on that persona where, you know, Metropolis is the bustling, literal Metropolis future. And, you know, Gotham
is
so retro.
It's like a 60s futurism version of a city.
It's like the Fallout universe of, like, technology advanced, but they kept the 50s aesthetic.
Right. It's like someone, yeah, it's retro futurism at its finest, really. I mean, it's like a propaganda poster, which is, it keeps a really interesting feel in that way, but I don't think it has quite the depth that Gotham does.
Right.
Well, and what you were saying about the retrofuturism feeling kind of propaganda, it's in a way that kind of keeps it from feeling quite as real. Whereas we don't have cities so much like that in real life as we do cities that do have darker underbellies such. And I think that that's part of what makes Gotham so appealing.
It's very relatable.
It's very relatable, yes.
Mm-hmm. Gotham is every little dark corner that you never want to see exposed.
It is every alleyway that you are terrified to walk down, yeah.
Or walk down with your parents.
Outside the movie theater.
Yes.
There's a movie theater 2 blocks away, guys.
Let's not find it that way.
Yeah. I didn't even mean to go that way.
But no, I took it that way. I took it down the dark alley.
So, speaking of running with things, the three of us all kind of commented on, and Kayla brought this up definitely, where all these characters continue their vigilante role or outgrew that persona. What about a character who lived his life in that whole universe. He became a superhero. He extended his persona even further. But he wasn't always meant to be that hero in the first place, you know, with a character like Dick Grayson, who...
He was always meant to be the better Batman.
He, Bruce has always said that he is what Batman should be, but Dick doesn't... In different incarnations of his character, in different storylines, he never wanted to be Batman. Or he wants to be his own thing. That's why he picked Nightwing. Or that's when he first joined Bruce, he was Robin. But even in Justice League 51 this week, you know, it's still bringing in those modern ties. Dick is asking Bruce, is like, why did you send me here? I was totally out of my league. And Bruce is like, are you kidding me? I wanted you to shadow me. It was because of your clever thinking that we kind of figured out what the situation was. Dick, the reason why I brought you here is because one day you're going to be a member of this league. And Dick's like, yeah. What, you expect me to join the Justice League? And Bruce just straight up tells him, no, I expect you to lead them.
Such a good panel.
And it's, you know, everyone has these such high hopes for Dick Grayson. And he's very, very much been a character that's been able to link all of these different characters. And he's been the only, literally the only character who has worked with the Teen Titans and led the Teen Titans, led the Titans, and at one point even led the Justice League itself post-crisis before Flashpoint and everything. And it's even gone on to say that he's the only person in the DC universe that members of the Justice League will take orders from. So what would his idyllic world be? Because we know through and through Dick Grayson is many things.
I would think that for idyllic, I mean, maybe his parents didn't die in the... I'm sorry.
No, his foot's
asleep. Oh, my foot's asleep.
I thought you were getting that frustrated that I was saying. No. I was like, I'm sorry, if I didn't mean to disappoint. I mean, obviously, there's like the trauma aspect, but then we wouldn't exactly get Dick Grayson becoming...
He's the character that grew out of his trauma, though, more so than Bruce.
This is true. And then there's the whole Court of Owls thing that really kind of cast a dark shadow on that. Oh, gosh. Yeah, it is.
Still waiting to see how that plays out.
It'd be very interesting to see how that play out. So maybe his idyllic world wouldn't necessarily be one where life was always 100% happy, but maybe one where the poor guy gets a couple of breaks.
Yeah.
He doesn't get punched in the gut. Well, it's every other week.
I mean, Tim Seeley, Tom King, and then Lansig and Kelly, their whole run with Grayson, especially towards the end, is them pointing out Dick is many things. He is the acrobat. He's Robin. He's Nightwing. He's a talent. There's all these people that have influenced him, and all he's wanting to do is kind of be his own person. And with that in mind, you know, would there be one possible future where Dick would be happy, or is it just him constantly moving, that kind of circus blood in him where he can't be in one place? And then maybe that blend of different cultures and different aspects, that additional nurturing would be something that would break him out of that black mercy, kind of like how Wonder Woman was pulling on it, and then Clark felt the vibrations of Krypton, and it's like there's something wrong. Or when Bruce had his black mercy attached to him, and that was getting pulled off, Joe Chill turned on his dad, who was winning the fight in the first place. So, I don't know, there's a lot to be said about what would be our headcanons for these characters. Mm-hmm. Like, my personal thing, he'd be married to Barbara. Damian would actually be his son. He would still have a really good relationship with Bruce and all the Bat family. You know, these characters mean a lot to each other. We wouldn't have these characters without the relationships. And, you know, that's the whole thing Titans is based on. It's they all have some sort of friendship or relationship that was taken from them, and they want to know why.
I mean, kind of bringing it back to Jason a little bit, like, I got to see that a little bit in Batman and Robin Eternal, where Jason, he's reliving once again the whole Joker beating him and killing him experience, except he's in control again, and he finally comes to terms with that whole situation. It seems like he's finally going to move past it, except he's probably not, because they're going to bring it up again. Freaking
see, I love the way the art shifted too, because it was just Jason with the crowbar, and then the Red Hood mask came, then the Robin cape came, and then the Ra's al Ghul spikes came. Mm-hmm. All the people that have influenced him since his incarnation, and then him finally accepting it and accepting that he hasn't been okay for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know.
Yeah, it's we're probably never going to get to see that part again for a while.
I think Tim's idyllic world already happened. It's just that it doesn't exist. Yeah,
I feel like Tim's
the
only one, because he broke off. He's like, I don't want to work with Batman. I want to do my own thing. I want to be the detective.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to be with his parents and protect them.
I don't know.
Caleb, well, what's your character that you would want a Black Mercy for?
I feel like we should break out of Gotham.
Then break us out of Gotham.
So you're in Marvel now.
No.
Natasha Romanoff, go.
Oh, God.
Steve Rogers.
Steve Rogers had his Black Mercy, and then he got frozen in ice.
This is true.
Who I'd like to see, I suppose, is...
She's thinking.
I know. We're so into Gotham now, it's hard to think of other characters.
Lanterns. Super people.
Actually, you know who would be interesting?
My fictional boyfriend?
Kyle Rayner.
I should have gone with him.
No, not Kyle.
You really
Rayner.
Should have
well,
left with
okay,
him.
My whole thing with Kyle Rayner is his girlfriend was never shoved into a freezer. Anyway, right?
He has so
right?
many better girlfriends
Please
after
forget.
That.
Forget.
I kind of, and again, this is a character who we almost sort of saw what her world would have looked like, is Kara in the New 52, because she has such a hard time adjusting to Earth, and it's really at the forefront of her story that she is an alien and an immigrant in all senses of the word, and she's in this hostile world and has had everything, her world, her people, her parents, her friends, her culture completely ripped away from her, and the only person left to her of that is her cousin, who she last saw as an infant and is now even older, and she's, I guess, watching her adjust to this new world is a really interesting part of her story. So in that direction, we could discuss what would her world look like on Earth instead of on Krypton.
That's actually really interesting.
What's weird for me is I've always pictured Kara as the happy-go-lucky version of Superman.
Right, and she is characterized that way in a lot of times, but in the New 52...
Except for that one time she became a Red Lantern.
Yeah.
It's the best characterization for Kara. Oh my goodness, I loved her as a Red Lantern.
I need to finish that storyline at some point. I read the first issue of it.
So good. I love the Red Lanterns. Kara's perfect world. Oh man, that's Metropolis. I don't know anything about Metropolis. Except for the Metropolis kid. Sorry. We discovered my love of goggles and jackets last week when we had John on.
Yeah.
But I feel like Kara's perfect world would very much be remnants. Not even remnants, or not even Ghost of Krypton, but just that you know, she's able to move past her entire planet blowing up, and she's one of like three survivors. But she would very much have her own place in that world, because a lot of her old characterization was very much in the vein of she is tied to Superman. She is very much in that shadow. So if we had an idyllic world for her, she would break out of it. Or she would be the main star, and then maybe Superman was the one who came crashing down onto Earth years later. And then she's the one with Jimmy Olsen instead of, I don't know.
Shout out to the TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been a characterization of theirs. That was a really big push in the Bruce Timm universe, too. where she and Jimmy were dating. Or even her real, or not even real, one of the other Bruce Timm situations we saw her, where she ended up joining the Legion of Superheroes. And she's with Brainiac 5 in the future, and she's found a place where they need a Superman. Uh-huh. And then she's able to provide that for those people.
Yeah, it seems like, just kind of hearing all those comments, it seems like her ideal world would really be she's not in Superman's shadow the whole time. She is her own person. Kind of like how Nightwing and Dick Grayson, he wanted to separate himself from Batman.
Or Batkids 1, or Batkids 2 through 9 not being in the shadow of Dick Grayson.
Even if in a world that's not where she's in Superman's shadow on Earth, in Krypton, she's still looking to find her place. So I think for Kara, in general, being able to establish her own identity and her own purpose in the world, whether that's on Krypton or Earth or some other place in the universe, is a driving part of her character and figuring out what makes herself tick. She's very... There's a lot of introspection going on in all of her storylines.
I think you'd really like the... what is planned for her in Rebirth with Steve Orlando, because Clark is dead and we have dead, the dead. Reign of the dead, not dead Clark. And we have a reign of Superman in
a week.
It literally lasted a week. Clark came last week. But she's trying to move on, and she's carrying forward the Superman emblem. She wants to make the best of her cousin's legacy on Earth, even though she was kind of sick with the same ailments that were happening Clark. She was slowly losing her powers, but she still wanted to help fight in any way that she could and help her cousin, you know, try and survive a little bit longer. But now that he's gone, she wants to make the best of that situation and help as many people as she can. And I feel like that's a really good kind of character arc for her, because Steve Orlando has that same vein for a lot of his characters. You know, that's the same thing that that was written for Midnighter, even, where he was very much an outsider trying to look in to a world where he was isolated from, you know, being grown up and made in a lab. I don't know. I really like Steve Orlando, so he's great. I want Midnighter to come back still. Give me issue 13.
Have him show up in Nightwing. Please.
I don't want Midnighter to be a side character. I really want him to be a leading character, because I think that's just really important.
Would you be content with him at least showing up, though?
He is going to show up in Nightwing issue 1. I know that. I saw the preview.
Oh. Well, he can at least keep making dick-ass jokes.
But I want Midnighter.
I think you might want, or maybe you don't want to rephrase dick-ass jokes.
No, that's Midnighter's character.
Yeah.
I mean,
I know it is, but so I don't know.
Let the phrasing stand. You can all interpret that as you will. So, yeah, I think that's going to wrap up the conversation there on an excellent note.
We need to go to bed. Yeah, Comic-Con is tomorrow.
Yeah. Truly, truly uplifting. Uplifting.
See, I'm kind of going to...
Take that as you will.
I am really excited to see how many more jokes there are about Dick Grayson's ass in Nightwing. Just because that's just a legacy.
It is.
I feel like Dick would have been a butt model in his ideal world.
He would have been an underwear model.
I'm so glad that every single artist who's really... I'm so appreciative of every single artist who's penciled Dick Grayson and...
It's just a thing.
Taking that extra care, and I love that it's a thing. I love that it's a thing that they do. And as an artist, I would just, that would be so much fun to have the opportunity.
Just to say, I drew Dick Grayson's ass, yes. And it was excellent.
I would put that on my resume if I could draw.
Oh yes, you've drawn Dick Grayson's ass. We'll take a look at this.
Can you make...
Yes, I'd recognize that ass anywhere.
Can you make this character sexy? No, not Dick Grayson.
No, can't do it. But anyway, to close this out, where can the people listening find both Rachel and Kayla on social media for both their respective things?
All right. So you can find me on my... Let's see. You can find my Twitter, which is Rachel B or Raising, R-A-E-Z-I-N-G, at Twitter. Otherwise, you can find me at rachelbenkin-illustration.tumblr.com, which is my non-portfolio arts website.
For Kayla, all your cosplaying stuff.
Yeah, I've been several places now. So you can find me on Facebook, actually, at facebook.com/GalateaCosplay. That's G-A-L-A-T-E-A. You can also find me on Tumblr as well. Also GalateaCosplay.tumblr.com. There's a hyphen in between Galatea and cosplay. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram under the same handle. It's at Galatea423 for all of my cosplay and life shenanigans and many cats.
So many cats. And yeah, as always, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Z2 Podcast. And be sure to give us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to that. Be nice to hear from you guys. Let us know if you like this 0.5 episode idea. We have a couple more we want to try out as well.
Or if you want us to ever integrate some of these old discussion points into the regular podcast. I know we try and shoot for like just an hour with those, but we've gone extending them recently. Our goal is not to hit 4 hours or 3 hours one sitting.
Self-control and editing.
Well, it's but just a so natural conversation.
Stuff. So you can just make more episodes.
By all means, talk as long as you want. I listen to you guys while I'm working in my studio.
Just make them segment.
2 hours is still the longest one.
Yeah,
we're trying to keep it under
that. It was a good episode, though.
Alrighty. Anyway, so, thank you guys. We're going to go to sleep. Yeah, we're going to go have fun.
If you're at the con, have fun. It'll be great.
You won't recognize us.
Probably not.
One day we'll bring t-shirts.
Yeah, we'll make that dream a reality one day.
For all 8 of you.
Anyway, catch you guys next time.
Love you, Internet.